Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end.
Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Trump's first year with Simon Marks.
Hello from Washington. I'm Simon Marks, and I hope you're enjoying what the Americans always call happy holidays. Welcome to our special two-hour broadcast here on LBC. We're looking back at a roller coaster year in America because whatever you think of the US president, whether you love him or loathe him, that is exactly what it has been. Living in the US, covering President Trump for LBC during 2017 has been a year-long ride of unpredictability with all sorts of highs and lows, twists and turns, jolts and bumps, and constant reminders that you never ever know what lies right around the corner. It all began, of course, on January the 21st at high noon. A new sheriff officially arrived in town.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States. But
while the swearing-in followed time-honored tradition, the new president's inaugural address did not. Flanked by his predecessors in the White House, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and Jimmy Carter, and by his vanquished and devastated opponent, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump dumped on them all. He accused America's political elites of reducing the country to rubble.
Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities, rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape, and the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
Ian Dale, watching alongside me in our Washington studios, didn't fancy it at all.
What I heard there was the most divisive speech I've ever heard from a president of the United States at an inauguration ceremony. I thought large parts of it were a disgrace. Large parts of it could have been delivered by Benito Mussolini.
And George W. Bush apparently agreed, telling friends afterwards that was some weird stuff, except he didn't use the word stuff. It was a brave woman then who decided to be the first foreign leader to set foot in Donald Trump's White House.
Today's talks, I think, are a significant moment for President Trump and I to build our relationship, and I look forward to continuing to work with you.
You know, it's interesting because I am a people person. I think you are also, Teresa. And I can often tell how I get along with somebody very early, and I believe we're going to have a fantastic relationship.
That didn't stand the test of time, and it wasn't the most recent tensions over the president's retweets of racist videos by Britain First that were the first wrinkle in the relationship. That came while Theresa May was still in American airspace. No sooner had she left the White House than President Trump, with a flourish of his executive pen, was closing America's borders to citizens from seven mainly Muslim countries.
I'm establishing new vetting measures to keep radical Islamic terrorists out of the United States of America. We don't want them here. We only want to admit those into our country who will support our country and love deeply our people.
And so chaos ensued on what was only the second weekend of the Trump presidency. As immigration officials implemented the president's orders, protesters swamped America's airports. We brought you live coverage on Matt Stadland's overnight program.
We can now go across to Washington and LBC's US correspondent Simon Marks.
The resistance to this is beginning to grow. We're witnessing protests at major airports all over the United States. But as you know, Donald Trump is absolutely standing by what he's done. He says it's working out very nicely. And this, of course, is exactly what he said he was going to do.
In London, the Prime Minister, who just days earlier had walked hand in hand through the White House grounds with the President and invited him to make a state visit to the UK, suddenly distanced herself from him.
This government is clear that that policy is wrong. We wouldn't do it. In 6 years as Home Secretary, I never introduced such a policy. We believe it is divisive and wrong.
And then came a ludicrous attempt by the White House to persuade people that what President Trump himself had called a travel ban was in fact not a ban at all. The hapless White House spokesman at the time, Sean Spicer.
It can't be a ban if you're letting a million people in. If 325,000 people from another country can't come in, that is by nature not a ban.
The courts didn't buy it and stopped it, arguing it was a ban targeting people specifically because of their Muslim faith and therefore illegal. On Twitter, the president slammed what he called so-called judges, and in person he went furiously after the courts.
Courts seem to be so political. A bad high school student would understand this. Anybody would understand this.
He also vented his fury towards the media, whose coverage of the travel ban stuck in his craw.
I listened to a bunch of stuff last night on television that was disgraceful. It was disgraceful.
And that set the tone for the opening weeks of the Trump presidency. He signed executive order after executive order, giving the impression that he thought the presidency was all about governing by decree, not working within America's constitutional system. It divides power between the presidency, the Congress, and the courts. And the president chipped away at public confidence in the fourth estate, the press, at one point saying this.
It's frankly disgusting the way the press is able to write whatever they want to write, and people should look into it.
And then taking his battle against fake news to an utterly dyspeptic press conference, and this memorable exchange with CNN's Jim Acosta.
Since you are attacking our news organization, can you give us a chance?
Your organization.
You are attacking our news organization. Can you give us a chance to ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir, can you give us a question?
Don't be
rude.
You're
attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you give us a question?
Can
you stay categorical?
You are fake news.
We've never seen anything like that before in Washington, nor this. An assertion by the president's advisor Kellyanne Conway in an interview with NBC that there are two kinds of facts.
You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Alternative facts? Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
Sean Spicer, of course, was destined to resign his post as White House press secretary. He told lie after lie from behind the White House podium, and that is a fact. But someone else who also lied was also making headlines less than a month into the presidency. None other than National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who was fired by President Trump on Valentine's Day, right in the middle of Clive Ball's programme.
What's been going on, Simon?
The questions that are being asked here now are not why he's resigned so quickly after moving into the National Security Council, but why it's taken 3.5 weeks for Donald Trump to get rid of him. Because it was apparent a month ago that Michael Flynn had not been truthful about the conversations that he had had with the Russian ambassador to the United States.
And indeed, Michael Flynn has now acknowledged that, entering a guilty plea to charges that he lied to the FBI. The Flynn departure was in many ways a turning point for the Trump administration. It fueled the notion that something was wrong about the Trump team's relationship with the Russians. So did another firing of the man who was investigating that relationship. News of that broke during Ian Collins' late-night programme on LBC.
Donald Trump has fired the FBI boss, James Comey, with a White House statement saying he had been terminated and removed from office.
It is not often that the director of the FBI finds himself being summarily fired by the president, especially just a matter of days after the president expressed full confidence in the director of the FBI.
The Trump team claimed Mr. Comey was gone because he mishandled an investigation into Hillary Clinton and her email, and that the president merely acted on the recommendation of top officials. White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders spun it this way for the president.
Well, I can speak to my own personal experience. I've heard from countless members of the FBI that are grateful and thankful for the president's decision.
But soon, the president himself conceded that the recommendations he'd received had nothing to do with the FBI director's departure. He personally had it in for Mr. Comey.
Regardless of recommendation, I was going to fire Comey.
Why would Donald Trump take the unbelievably risky political decision to fire the very man who was investigating his campaign? James Comey himself soon provided an answer. The president, he claimed in a one-on-one meeting, had asked him to stop investigating ties between Michael Flynn and Moscow, and Mr. Comey had refused.
He did not order you to let it go.
Again, those words are not an order.
No.
And the reason I keep saying his words is I took it as a direction.
Right.
But I mean, this is the president of the United States with me alone saying, I hope this. I took it as this is what he wants me to do.
With talk of impeachment in the air, the next move was inevitable.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, the U.S. Department of Justice has named a special counsel to take over the FBI inquiry into ties between President Trump's election campaign team last year and the Russians.
Enter Robert Mueller, a veteran political operator in Washington who has worked for Republican and Democratic presidents alike, and who from that moment has headed up the investigation that continues to bedevil the Trump White House. We'll talk a lot more about the Russia investigation later in the programme. And next, more of our review of Trump's first year.
Christmas on LBC.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right, every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.